It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
A leader is somebody who's willing to do what's right, even when it's not easy, even when it's politically difficult. And if you look at my track record from athletics to the military to fighting to drain the swamp in Washington, I've been willing to take the tough stands, the principled positions, even when it was detrimental to me politically. I had more money spent negative on me than all the other candidates in the race combined and governor on both sides of the aisle. But that's fine. I'm willing to stand up because I know standing up for the people of Florida is the right thing to do. So I believe there's no limit to what we can accomplish here as long as you have the courage to lead. And I pledge to you as governor, I will work my butt off to accomplish great things for this state. I will show the courage to lead. And we'll keep Florida great and we'll make it even greater. God bless you guys. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
That's the voice of Congressman Ron DeSantis, who won handily the governor's race in Florida last night against Adam Putnam, who was not a bad guy, not really at all. He was the agricultural director, but maybe not as conservative. Ron DeSantis has defended the president. Not that that's, you know, for my part, the only thing that commends him, but Ron DeSantis has been just a fearless warrior on television about truth. He's a former veteran. He was a JAG officer in the Navy and also a graduate of Harvard. So it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see how he handles now being a governor. He is a part of the Freedom Caucus in Washington, so his presence will be missed there. But interestingly enough, in Florida, in other races, there, of course, everyone's counting these congressional races, the Democrats and the Republicans, because the Democrats want to take back the House. The Republicans are famously worried that they may lose the House and, of course, that impeachment will begin and all the other things. So it was interesting that in at least one race last night that I saw the numbers on of a member of the House, an incumbent Republican, Republicans voted in droves in that midterm election. I don't know if that holds up statewide, but I would just say that this was an incumbent, and the numbers were just pretty amazing. So that's an interesting factoid going forward from today. And following the other states now, in Arizona, which is another state which we tracked pretty closely, here is the winner.
Tonight marks the next chapter in this campaign, the beginning of a 70-day sprint to electing Arizona's next senator. People are voting in just 43 days. It's a big deal. This is how I see this campaign. It's a choice between a doer and a talker, between a patriot and a protester, between a career fighter pilot and a career politician, between proven grit and Hollywood glitz. Now, there's nothing wrong with Hollywood glitz, right? Look, I am as impressed as anyone that my opponent brags that she owns over 100 pairs of shoes. I, on the other hand, have over 100 combat missions serving our country.
That was Martha McSally, who won the Republican nomination for Senate in Arizona. She won by 52.2%. Kelly Ward, 28.3%, and 19.2% to Sheriff Joe Arpaio. Lots to say about this race. Of course, Kelly Ward and Joe Arpaio, Joe jumped in late in the game at 86 and divided the conservative vote because Kelly and Joe are the conservatives in that race. And so it's for conservatives, it was a very unfortunate outcome. Martha McSally, of course, is a combat veteran. At least that's what she says. I mean, yes, I have concerns about this. I've made them pretty well known. Martha McSally has a D or an F rating by all conservative groups. She refused to go to the inauguration of President Trump. She was endorsed by Jeff Flake, but she refused the endorsement, probably because it was politically suicide, because Kelly Ward was ahead of Jeff Flake by 30 points before Karl Rove and Mitch McConnell and other establishment types talked Martha McSally into getting into the race. And you can hear that she's a strong candidate. She's very persuasive, energetic. And so now she will go up against Kristen Sinema, who I've told you, Martha McSally described her just in that clip right now. Kristen Sinema is a very strong candidate too, but she's sorry that she's not going to be running against Kelly Ward and Joe Arpaio because they are the conservatives, and she thought she could more easily beat them. And so people believe that McSally is a stronger candidate to go up against Kristen Sinema. We'll see about that, and that's the result in Arizona. There are a few other things. The governor of Arizona maintained he's going to be the nominee for the Republicans again. That's Ducey. And, of course, he's got this big job of appointing the replacement for Senator John McCain. I haven't said much about that yet, but because of the timing of John McCain's death, the person that the governor now will have to appoint someone who will serve through, I believe it's 2020. And then they'll have to start all over again and find a candidate, or the incumbent will run again. So if Mr. McCain had resigned or had passed away before, I think it was May, someone could have run in this election. So that's what's happening. So now Governor Ducey has to decide who he's going to choose. And there's a lot of discussion about Sidney McCain, but I'm telling you, insiders tell me that Cindy is totally pro-choice, totally gay marriage, has a number of other things in her philosophy and embrace of various issues that would be alarming to conservatives. And so that's an interesting situation. There are other people being considered, some of them conservative and others not. Some are speculating that Governor Ducey really wants the seat himself, and he's kind of playing, maybe looking for a placeholder till he can appoint himself after he serves this next term as governor. I don't know. You know, we'll be talking about that more, but that's kind of the inside of what's happening in Arizona, as best I know right now. In Oklahoma, and the Oklahoma primary escaped my attention. The main thing in Oklahoma, of course, there's some congressional seats about which I can't really fill in the blanks, but I can say something about Kevin Stitt won the GOP primary for Oklahoma governor. He is a mortgage company owner from Tulsa. He's a newcomer. He owns Gateway Mortgage Company. He put quite a bit of his own money into the race. Out of Kevin Stitt's mouth, he says that he feels his opponent did not support President Trump on immigration policies as much as he would. So that was a trigger. That was one issue. The other issues, I really don't know. But the truth is that Kevin Stitt has won the GOP primary. He is a novice, so that should be very interesting. One thing I failed to mention to you was back now to Florida. The Democrat that won is a George Soros-backed Democrat. He is left of the left, and he's the first black candidate, of course, which muddies things. You know, it's like being a woman. Women are supposed to support all women, right? Because somebody's going to be the first female to do what? Fill in the blank. It doesn't matter who the woman is. We're just supposed to get all excited that she's a woman. And it's the same thing about black candidates. You know, because they're black, black voters are supposed to get excited. And no distinction between policies and understanding. Boy, if that isn't racist and sexist, I don't know what is. But this particular gentleman is, he wants to abolish ICE. He wants a $1 billion tax increase. He wants single-payer health care system. So Ron DeSantis is saying that Gillum, who is the Andrew Gillum, he's the Tallahassee mayor, wants to make Florida Venezuela. So, but the left, of course, Bernie Sanders endorsed him and is thrilled. The left is hoping that minority voters in Florida will unite behind this new candidate, because he is a minority. And so this is going to be a very interesting race. All right, so that kind of takes us through that. Now, there's a lot of other things to say about elections. Let's see if I can get this stuff in for you. A three-judge panel Monday, in North Carolina struck down the state's Republican-drawn redistricting map. They say it was unconstitutional partisan gerrymandering, and so that's the second time this particular court has done this. Gerrymandering, of course, is certainly a way that parties in power, this has been happening for I don't know how long, at least 100 years probably, maybe more, the parties in power will redraw the districting map to favor their party. I don't know if there's any party that doesn't do this, but suddenly this three-judge panel is deciding that the North Carolina Assembly has done something illegal. So it looks like they want to actually make this sitting assembly redraw the map. The election is just in a few weeks. You probably know this, or it's November 7th or 8th or 9th, something like that. And so it's virtually impossible. It would change the candidates because it would change their district. They would have to realign themselves with different districts. And they're actually thinking about doing this, forcing the legislature to redraw a map, or the judges themselves would redraw the map. Well, the judges, one is appointed by Bill Clinton and one was appointed by Jimmy Carter. So you see how this goes. And you can see how it will throw North Carolina into chaos. Some are saying that they may not even be able, if it plays out in different ways, but if it plays out in one way, North Carolina might not even know who their Congress people might be or their other offices till January, which would throw off everything happening in the House of Representatives. Then who's going to be the Speaker? Then if it's really close, who's going to have the majority? Who's going to be the minority? You can see the repercussions of that kind of a decision. Then another story that came to my attention just last night, the 7th Congressional District in Virginia, which is the one Congressman Dave Brat represents, it's the one where he defeated Eric Cantor in a completely surprising upset. His opponent is a Democratic nominee named Abigail Spanberger. This is an amazing story, actually. Abigail Spanberger sent a letter to the Congressional Leadership Fund, threatening legal action over information about Spanberger that was obtained through legal channels. So there's now a lawsuit. Now, what's this all about? Because this information, and there's documentation for this. This is not speculation. That Abigail Spanberger worked at the Islamic Saudi Academy in Northern Virginia, which the Associated Press reported was dubbed Terror High, after 12 U.S. senators and a federal commission wanted it shut down. Spanberger's former employer produced a number of well-known terrorists, including Ahmed Omar Abu Ali, valedictorian of the Academy in 1999, who was convicted in 2005 on charges of providing material support to the Al-Qaeda terrorist network. He was sentenced to 30 years in prison. This led U.S. Senate Democratic leader Charles Schumer to issue a press release in 2005 calling for a full-scale probe of the controversial Islamic school and questioning whether the Islamic Saudi Academy was another madrasa. So here's the thing. Abigail Spanberger was hired and working with them. I don't know what the timeline on that is. We'll have to look into that. But she is the opponent for Congressman Dave Brat, and it's a kind of a much more of a race than I think anyone ever thought. But that's Virginia's 7th Congressional District. I hope we'll be hearing more about that. But you know, you never know. Probably will never be reported the way things go. I have so much incredible news to tell you today. I hope that you'll just stay tuned, and I'll do my very best to make it as clear as I possibly can. Thank you so much for listening. Back in just a second.
Hello, I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. For the last 2 years, we've just had tremendous response, early response to the announcement they were going to Israel on a Holy Land tour. We're going March of this year. We go March of every year. Last year we filled up like early fall, and I expect us to fill up early fall this year as well. So if you're interested in this March 14th through the 22nd tour, and you'll be going with primarily supporters of AFA and AFR, just get the brochure and check it out. You can call us today at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and leave us your name and your address, and we'll mail you a brochure. If you simply want to go online, all the information is there. It's at twholyland.com, twholyland.com. If you want to go in March, we're filling up, and we're filling up fast, so check it out, twholyland.com.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. Last month, social media sites began to come under fire when several Republican leaders and eventually the president himself accused them of quote-unquote shadow banning prominent Republicans. The accounts in question noticed that their names were not showing up in Twitter's search bar. As obvious as that discrimination was, the media's response was even more telling. For example, the New York Times reported on the incident by focusing their whole story on how Twitter's silencing of political leaders it disagreed with wasn't technically shadow banning because you could still go directly to the profiles and see their content. Usually apolitical, lifehacker.com suggested that if these accounts don't want this to happen to them, they should stop encouraging abusive behavior, ignoring the fact that anyone can report anything they don't like as abusive on Twitter. The culture is rallied against conservative thought. It is vital that we pass on truth to our children and our neighbors. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Blake Bramlett. I graduated in May of 2016, and I graduated with a degree in interdisciplinary studies, focusing in psychology and missions. The professors here at TMU have really impacted my life in more than one way. In the classroom, of course, but really honestly, what makes the experience at Truett better is that they're mentors to us.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
There was a time in American history when folks would start their day with a cup of coffee and the morning newspaper. Then the radio came along, and not too long after that, the television. But still, every morning, we would open up the front door to find the morning paper. And then the internet happened. That's why Pittsburgh is about to become the largest city in the nation without a daily print newspaper. The Post-Gazette is cutting back to 5 days a week instead of seven. Turns out more people prefer to get their headlines and sports scores on the newspaper's digital space. Good news for readers, but not so good news for the press operators or the truck drivers or the delivery boys. A Pew Research study found more than half of the largest newspapers in the country have laid off employees since 2017. As Bob Dylan once said, the times, they are a-changin'. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
You know, I just got something in my inbox that I want to share with you. I just mentioned to you that Abigail Spanberger, who is the Democratic candidate in Virginia's 7th District, running against Dave Brat in a purportedly difficult race, surprisingly in some ways. And so Abigail Spanberger and her folks are suing the Congressional Leadership Fund because information has come to light that she worked at the Saudi Academy in Northern Virginia. I just told you that. Okay, but here's the new news. Guess who her attorneys are? Guess who's representing her in this lawsuit? It's Perkins Coie. Does that ring a bell? Should, because Perkins Coie is the entity that was hired by the DNC and the Hillary Clinton campaign. They were the intermediary who paid for the fake dossier. The fake Russian dossier. They handled the money, Perkins Coie. There are so many other things they've done, which I can't even, don't even come to mind right now. If I had a second to sit here and let them come up on my mental screen, I would. But it's just, this is pretty stunning stuff. And so I wanted to make sure I told you that. Now today, or yesterday on Capitol Hill, the Bruce Orr, who is a Justice Department official married to Nellie Orr, the Russian expert, who we think probably wrote the Russian dossier. Bruce Orr has nothing to do in his duties at the Justice Department with anything like this. I think he works on drug enforcement. But Catherine Herridge had a great report on what happened yesterday when Bruce Orr testified behind closed doors at a House Oversight and Judiciary Committee meeting. It's off the record, and so no one can quite say, but we've been hearing reports about it. In fact, in a few minutes, I'm going to play Daryl Issa's comments about that hearing. It was pretty amazing. A blockbuster, I'm thinking. Let's listen to Catherine Herridge.
Mr. Orr, were you acting alone, or did you have authority from a Justice Department official? How did your wife benefit from the dossier contract?
Justice Department official Bruce Orr, whose portfolio included drugs and gangs, not Russia, ignored Fox's questions as he arrived on Capitol Hill. With the closed-door deposition underway, Republican lawmakers said Orr told his FBI contacts there were issues with the Trump dossier and its author, former British spy Christopher Steele, who had an anti-Trump bias. Sources tell Fox News the evidence suggests the National Security Court was kept in the dark when it authorized a surveillance warrant for Trump campaign aide Carter Page.
Not only did the FBI know that the dossier was unverified, but they also knew that there was real credibility issues.
Another lawmaker said Orr's answers about the timing and handling of the dossier do not line up with other witnesses, including former FBI lawyer Lisa Page, who sent anti-Trump texts, and Glenn Simpson, whose firm Fusion GPS was paid by the DNC and Clinton campaign for the anti-Trump research.
There are a number of factual conflicts. Either Bruce Orr's lying or Glenn Simpson's lying. And in another circumstance, either Bruce Orr's lying or Lisa Page's lying.
After the FBI fired Steele as a source over his media contacts, documents show Steele used Orr as a back channel to maintain contact with the Bureau and pass along information. Orr's wife, Nellie, worked for Fusion GPS on Russia. Lawmakers point to a financial conflict.
Although Bruce Orr would appear to claim to be without partisan, his wife, since 2015, knowingly worked on the fine dirt on Trump, try to make this connection with the Russians, for which she was paid, and he didn't properly disclose.
The Orr deposition concluded here just an hour ago after 7 hours of grilling. Democratic lawmakers did not attend, leaving the questioning to their staffers and lawyers.
All right, that was Catherine Herridge, and that we're learning more about this testimony. I think basically Bruce Orr is saying things like the FBI knew that he had told the FBI that the dossier was not verified, that it was very questionable, that Christopher Steele had this animus against President Trump. Christopher Steele, the British spy, wanted to do anything to stop him. It is, you know, just a step back from this because you know, I recognize that this is so complicated. You know, I who follow this every day get confused. And I'm thinking as we throw these names out, you get the gist. You understand that something really corrupt has happened and is happening. But it's very hard to sort of take the 30,000-foot view of it. Now, let me just say that basically what we have is a president, as in Obama, who began early to use the intelligence agencies, including the FBI, the Justice Department, the full force of the American government. Remember that before that, just in regard to conservatives, the IRS, to punish conservatives. It started way back then. Using the full force of the American government to destroy people that they didn't like. And in this case, it was a presidential candidate. You know, you wonder, would they have done this if Ted Cruz had won? I'm guessing they might have. You know, conjured up something because they wanted Hillary Clinton to win. And I think the agencies and the departments had all been so stacked by Obama acolytes and leftists or Hillary acolytes that they could have done any of this to any of them, just fill in the blanks with different issues. But they turned the full force of the American government, and especially the intelligence agencies, which were so corrupted, like John Brennan's leadership in the CIA, and I could go on. We know we've talked about this a lot. There were some really good people that were caught up in this, and I'm going to talk about a couple of them in just a second who tried to warn people. But basically, they took the information that they conjured up and actually created. There's this incredible story about Stephen Halper, who is the British agent who the FBI hired to spy on the Trump camp. they conjured up this story and decided to go after President Trump on some alleged collusion with Russia when they themselves were the ones colluding with Russia. And I'll make that case, at least in part. It's really actually epidemic. It's not just one story. It's an epidemic, the cooperation that the Hillary Clinton campaign and people around her and the DNC had with Russians. It's just stunning. And they did that because they didn't want anyone to win. Besides, it was an insurance policy, as Peter Strzok said, and they wanted Mrs. Clinton to win. The FBI did everything they could to make that happen, and so did the Justice Department, and so did President Obama's Justice Department, and Susan Rice, all the rest of them. I mean, they started revealing private conversations between American citizens. I think of General Flynn, which I'm going to get to more about him in a second, too. It is the worst breach of trust, I think, in American history. We talk about Benedict Arnold. That was one man turning against George Washington. This is a whole government bureaucracy and its intelligence agencies moving against not just President Trump. Let me make that clear again. It's not just against Donald Trump. It is against the American people who hold an allegiance and a love for the Constitution, for American values. We are the enemies. We are the ones they must purge. We are the ones they just want to use. They have no interest in having us really have any say. And when Americans who felt Donald Trump was expressing their views on immigration, on borders, on crime, you fill in the blanks, on the economy, decided that's the man they would take a chance on. There was no way this vast conspiracy of bureaucrats was going to allow that to happen. So they were willing to do illegal acts. They were willing to subvert the Constitution. It's just hard to fathom that the Federal Bureau of Investigation would so corrupt itself and not care about the rule of law in such a way, and Justice Department too. It's just amazing to me that nobody at Justice has been punished. Nobody. No one has been removed. The FBI has removed several people, which I guess is to their credit, but I'm sure that they have not dug deeply enough. There are several stories now that I want to share with you today, and all of them are important, every single one. And so I'm going to talk to you about them, give you an idea, and then we're going to post articles on our Facebook page so that you can follow up and read more. Because this was stunning. This came into my inbox yesterday after the show and didn't have a chance to share it with you, but it's an article by Richard Pollack of the Daily Caller. Richard is a national intelligence correspondent. Here's the thing. You remember Mrs. Clinton's email server in her bathroom in her home in New York? You do remember that that was part of the huge accusation that I think most Americans didn't quite understand. So she has a homemade server in her bathroom to make it easier. What's the big deal? And the argument was that the problem is it's not secured. It can't be secured. And also it's against the law for people who are working in government to use outside computers to deal with national security. It's a violation. People go to prison for that. So Mrs. Clinton made an exception for herself. And then there was all of this story breaking loose about hacking of the DNC server. That's different. That's not Mrs. Clinton's private server in her home. Much was made about how it must be the Russians. Remember that the DNC did not allow the FBI to go in and investigate who hacked their server. And that was the John Podesta emails and all those things that really were damaging to Mrs. Clinton. And the FBI were not allowed to go into that server. The DNC said, no, we won't let you do that. So the FBI hired an outside contractor, not a government-sanctioned person, who went in and declared it was the Russians who had hacked the DNC server. The FBI never saw it. I have to tell you, the FBI, that's not normal behavior. They don't rely on outside sources to verify information. All right, so all this time, everyone's talking about the Russians, but we found out, as of this article yesterday, that actually, when it came to Mrs. Clinton's homemade server, a Chinese-owned company operating in the Washington, D.C. area hacked Hillary Clinton's private server throughout her term as Secretary of State and obtained nearly all of her emails. The Chinese firm obtained Clinton's emails in real time as she sent and received communications and documents through her personal server. The Chinese wrote code that was embedded in the server, which was kept in Clinton's residence in upstate New York. The code generated an instant courtesy copy for nearly all of her emails and forwarded them to the Chinese company, according to the sources. Now, could I just pause to say, do you remember that the young guy that managed Mrs. Clinton's homemade server was given immunity by the FBI? So they never really, we never really knew anything about what he was doing and what the story was there. He was just given immunity. And so stop and think for a second. Mrs. Clinton was Secretary of State, one of the members of the President, President Obama's cabinet. That means she's emailing, I'm sure, other cabinet members, other members of the high-ranking officials of the government, and the President of the United States, who said he didn't know she had a private server, but we know he was lying because he knew her email address was not a government sanction, and as I recall, he had his own fake email address that he used. So correspondence from the president to the Secretary of State was in real time sent to the Chinese every day, every night, every day, 24/7. Everything Mrs. Clinton wrote, all the top secrets, all the revealing of whatever, whoever our agents were overseas, what they were doing, all of that stuff directly to the Chinese. And here is the real clincher. Louis Gohmert mentioned this when Peter Strzok was being interrogated by the House Oversight Committee. But no one picked up on it. No one made anything of it. And what Congressman Gohmert said was that Peter Strzok knew all about this. At the time, we didn't know the whole story, but that's what Congressman Gohmert was referring to. That we know now that two officials, investigator Frank Rucker and attorney Janet McMillan, repeatedly went to FBI officials and told them that the Chinese were hacking Mrs. Clinton's email server in real time. And guess what Peter Strzok and other FBI officials did? They did nothing. They did nothing. That's the first stunning story I wanted to make sure I told you today. We'll put this on our Facebook page. It's written by Richard Pollack in the Daily Caller, how this Chinese company hacked in real time all of Mrs. Clinton's emails the entire time she was Secretary of State. And then this is not new, but I didn't get a chance to tell you. This is a huge story. In any other world, any other time and space, this would be a breaking story. But Paul Sperry wrote a very long investigative piece on Real Clear Investigations, and this is the story. After claiming they could not possibly review the 675,000 potentially relevant emails in the 2 weeks before the November 8th election, FBI officials suddenly claimed that they had made a great technological breakthrough that allowed them to eliminate the vast majority of emails as duplicates. But that technology didn't work. What am I talking about? I'm talking about Anthony Weiner's laptop that in the investigation by New York investigators and FBI agents that Anthony Weiner was engaged in all kinds of nefarious sexual pursuits online, and they took his laptop, and they were shocked to find that all of, well, at least 675,000 of Mrs. Clinton's email were on Anthony Weiner's laptop. They were appalled. They turned it over to the FBI, and what happened? Director James Comey assured Congress that his bureau had reviewed all of the communications found on the Weiner laptop. They rushed out to exonerate her just a few days before the November 8th election. The truth is they only looked at like 1%. Ultimately, only 3,077 emails were reviewed. So he lied to Congress. They wrote a statement exonerating Mrs. Clinton before they had even reviewed the case. They didn't interview Huma Abedin or Anthony Weiner before reclosing the case. There's more to say about that, too. It's just, this is an article, Real Clear Investigations by Paul Sperry. We'll put that on our Facebook page, too. And you know what? That's not even all. So stay tuned, will you? Because I have more things to tell you about. And you know, truth begs to be told. And it gives the light of day. And that makes me optimistic that something eventually will be done. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Why do the heathen rage? My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Progressive writer Benjamin O'Keefe attacked Obia Nuju Ikocha, a pro-life advocate, via Twitter by demeaning her as a, quote, joke of a black person, end quote, after Ikocha quietly celebrated the demise of Michelle Wolf's Netflix show. Ikocha fired back on Twitter, quote, I'm a joke of a black person. I was born in Nigeria, daughter of the Igbo tribe. I can talk for hours in my native language about the traditions of my people. When I die, I will be buried beside my ancestors in the land passed down for generations. Benjamin, what is your tribe, end quote. To regressives, skin color equals worldview. People who differ get attacked. But this attack failed miserably.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. 9 states and the District of Columbia have legalized the recreational use of marijuana, and 14% of Americans used pot last year. Is this a good thing? Laws do make a difference. Where weed is legal, 20% of Americans used pot. Where it isn't, only 12% did. Unfortunately, pot usage is highest in the 18 to 34 age bracket. While 10% of adult users become addicted, an alarming 17% of adolescents do. And according to Dr. Michael Lynch, a toxicologist at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, early use is associated with more negative effects on brain and cognitive development. Plus, the higher levels of THC in today's marijuana cause agitation, anxiety, psychotic effects, and even seizures among pot users. Is legalizing pot a good idea? I'll let you be the judge.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
What if I told you that you could clean your family's laundry and help reach the next generation at the same time? That opportunity is here through a company called Redeem Clean. Every time you use Redeem Clean products, you help support the ministry of the American Family Association. In addition to your regular AFA giving, Redeem Clean Laundry Detergent allows you to increase your support of AFA just by continuing to wash your family's clothes. Redeem Clean products work as well as or better than other products on the market. They're environmentally safe, biodegradable, and they're made in the USA. And they were developed exclusively for the support of the American Family Association. For clean laundry and support of a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Learn more, find options, and order Redeem Clean products at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. We're beginning to get a sense of the full magnitude of not only Hillary Clinton's breach of her sworn commitments to safeguard American secrets during her disastrous stint as Secretary of State, but also of her betrayal of her country as well. Hillary's conscious decision to violate secure communications protocols, enabled by, among others, her Muslim Brotherhood-tied top aide, Huma Abedin, was reportedly and predictably exploited by communist China and probably other hostile nations. Evidently, every one of her official and personnel emails was obtained in real time by a Chinese intelligence front operating out of Northern Virginia. That means that the highly classified information she received and transmitted, as well as other sensitive correspondence, was certainly compromised and probably exploited. At a minimum, none of those implicated, including Hillary Clinton herself, should ever have access again to state secrets. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Certainly we've confirmed that Bruce Ohr was a willing and constant conduit between Fusion GPS, paid for by the Clinton campaign, and the FBI. What we find interesting is that because he's an attorney, when he was examined by Trey Gowdy, myself, Jim Jordan, and others, he seemed to ignore a couple of things like, well, did you ever in your career before make yourself a fact witness, put yourself in the middle as an attorney in a way in which you were conflicted by actually being, for example, the conduit of these USB filled with the dossier and so on? And he said he had never done it before and he knew it. And as I think you've reported, but I want to go on the record very clearly, He knew he was delivering not hearsay, but double hearsay that would never stand up in court. And he admitted that he was providing as fact right. that which was and turns out to be fiction. His prior relationship with the owner of Fusion GPS, Glenn Simpson, in fact, appears to be how she got the job. He was talking about her being a Russian expert, yeah. but there was no indication that she was sought after and worked regularly as a Russian expert, but rather she got this job for $44,000 to be a conduit, a researcher, right. but in fact, to make him a conduit.
That was Daryl Issa, and he's talking about Nellie Orr, the wife of Bruce Orr. Bruce testified yesterday. He's the Justice Department official who testified behind closed doors yesterday in the House. And Nellie Orr, of course, remember, got her her shortwave radio license just a few years ago and has, you know, been an apologist for Stalin, of all people. So here's Bruce Orr married to little Nellie and right embedded in the Justice Department. And Bruce Orr's job, again, as you heard Congressman Issa say, was not about Russia and any collusion or was a, you know, gathering intelligence. He was just doing this out of his enthusiasm, I guess, for the subject matter, out of his closeness to Christopher Steele, who hated President Trump. It's just it's an amazing story. I have to say, one way that you know how important the testimony was yesterday, even though Congressman Issa and none of the others can say some of the things that they heard, they're hinting about a lot of things. Daryl Issa was on Fox and Friends this morning, probably about 3 o'clock in the morning, California time. Just kind of shows you how important and how stunning it was to him. I want you to hear just a little bit more of what he had to say.
Like Robert Mueller wants to go that direction. He wants to go from the Trump campaign, assuming that the FISA warrants were valid, forward to try to get Trump, rather than going back and try to get Hillary and the DNC. You know, nobody is pushing back to find out, did the Democratic National Committee work with spies outside the U.S.? And by the way, they don't have to be Russian spies. They could be British spies that hated President Trump in order to change the outcome of the income with fake information, leading to FISA warrants and eavesdropping on a presidential candidate. You know, not since Watergate have we had this kind of a scandal, and Mueller wants nothing to do with it. He only wants to go forward from the FISA warrant, not back to find out it was invalid.
You know, I was listening to CNN last night about 6 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, and I heard Wolf Blitzer set up his show. I actually wish I had pulled it so we could listen, because it was like another world about Trump doing that, and then he's a, you know, unindicted co-conspirator, and all of, you know, all of these things, all of this spin and talk that really is not attached to reality, which is what at least half of Americans seem to believe. I remember that yesterday we talked at great length about how CNN was pushing the Lanny Davis story, that his client, Michael Cohen, knew that President Trump knew about that Russia-Trump Tower meeting before it took place, which would have been a very big deal. And then Lanny Davis had to admit that he lied about that. He said, oh, I made a mistake. Yeah, a mistake. He planted it with the Washington Post and with CNN. But CNN will not retract the story. So you see how this goes. And so, in regard, again, to a little bit about what Congressman Issa just had to say, he talked about British intelligence agents, and he said it wouldn't have to be necessarily Russians. It's that the Democrats were the ones, it looks like, had very close ties with other spies from other countries. And that brings me to a discussion of this Stephen Halper. Stephen Halper is a British citizen who owns a horse farm in Northern Virginia. Stephen Halper is the gentleman that was hired by the DNC and Hillary Clinton's campaign to entrap or go in and spy on the Trump campaign. Stephen Halper is the one that reached out to George Papadopoulos. This young guy, I think he's 24, offered him something like $3,000, just a call out of the clear blue or an email. How would you like to go to London and you know, write a paper on this? We'll pay you $3,000, pay your expenses. And so Papadopoulos is so excited. George Stephanopoulos might have been excited too. Anyway, Papadopoulos was excited. He goes to London, and lo and behold, he meets the Australian ambassador in a bar, and they just start as I recall, I think it was Downer who mentioned, Alexander Downer, who's the ambassador from Australia, who mentioned to George Papadopoulos that the Russians may have, you know, hacked Hillary Clinton's email. So this young guy is so excited that when he then meets, I forgot who he met with. I'm sorry, I want to make sure I get these names correct. But I think it might have been Alexander Downer that he said to him. Alexander asked him if he knew anything about Russians being involved, and he kind of set him up. And according to George Papadopoulos and George's wife, who's testified now before Congress, and so then George says, oh, yeah, I mean, they were drinking. Oh, yeah, I just heard something about that. And on the basis of that, they used that setup to begin an investigation on the Trump campaign, because George Papadopoulos was, of course, at the age of 24, a central part of the Trump campaign. He wasn't. He was just I don't know exactly what the relationship was, but he was too young to be considered anything other than maybe an affiliate, an associate, someone who was on the fringes and wanted to, a wannabe. And so this is how this whole thing started. Now, you remember when we interviewed Adam Lovinger, who was a former Defense Department analyst. We talked to him probably 6 weeks ago. Adam, if you've been watching Sean Hannity or you've been following Sarah Carter, you will know about Adam. And if you've listened to me, you'll know about Adam. But let me just read from Sarah Carter's piece here because I think it'll make it easier. Lovinger, Adam Lovinger, a whistleblower, is now battling to save his career. I will go to the chase here. What happened was that Adam discovered that Stephen Halper, the man I just described, the British agent, the British citizen, I should say, who we know has worked with the FBI for a long time, who was assigned to spy on the Trump campaign, was actually paid inordinate amounts of money from a Pentagon slush fund to do something. Actually, Adam discovered that he was negotiating with other foreign governments, which is against the law. A foreign person who is not part of our State Department does not have the authority to negotiate for the United States of America. So Adam Lovinger reported this. There's more. The Pentagon suspended Adam's top secret security clearance May the 1st, 2017, when he exposed through an internal review that Stephen Halper, who was then an emeritus Cambridge professor, had received roughly $1 million in taxpayer-funded money to write Defense Department foreign policy reports. Before Lovinger's clearance was suspended, he had taken a detail to the National Security Council as senior director for strategy. That would be in the White House, by the way. That was when, that's when the good guys were in charge. That's when Mike Flynn was still there. He was only there for 4 or 5 months before he was recalled to the Pentagon, stripped of his prestigious White House detail and ordered to perform bureaucratic makework in a Pentagon annex. His security clearance was eventually revoked in March of 2018, despite the Pentagon refusing to turn over a single page of its purported evidence of Lovinger's wrongdoing. So, by the way, Judicial Watch has filed a federal lawsuit against the Defense Department to obtain the withheld records. Lovinger also raised concern about Halper's role in conducting what appeared to be diplomatic meetings with foreigners on behalf of the U.S. government. And in the investigation, documents and information that Lovinger stumbled onto, there are troubling questions about Halper, who was believed to have worked with the CIA and part of the matrix of players in the Bureau's Crossfire Hurricane investigation into Trump's 2016 presidential campaign. Then it turns out, I mean, I'm going to have to skip ahead because there's so much more. We will put this article on our Facebook page. Whistleblower exposes key player in FBI Russia probe. It was all a setup. So gradually, Adam Lovinger was so punished and lost his security clearance, lost his job at the White House because he didn't have a security clearance. And now we find out that actually it's Halper who's connected to the Russians. Sarah details this in a great amount, several pages here. A Financial Times traces their relationship, his relationship with Russian billionaire Andrei Sheglikov, who was close ties with Russian President Vladimir Putin. There's a lot more to that, but she traces his Russian ties. And so the investigation into Trump didn't start with Carter Page or George Papadopoulos, but with Michael Flynn. Flynn was already on the CIA and Clinton target list. The reason they hated him was because he tried to expose what was happening and the intelligence agencies when he worked for President Obama. They hated him and came after him with a vengeance. And many people believe that that's the reason why President Trump became such a target, was because of Michael Flynn. Now I want to morph to, we're going to put that article on our Facebook page. And the last thing I want to share with you today, this is an article by Jordan Satchel. And it's titled, "After 33 Years of Decorated Service, General Michael Flynn Has Been Silenced by Robert Mueller." There's a reason why you haven't heard much from Lieutenant General Michael Flynn lately. The man who served his country honorably for 33 years has been effectively silenced by Special Counsel Robert Mueller as he awaits sentencing. Given the circumstances of his plea deal, Flynn cannot speak publicly about anything related to the charges against him. Doing so could void his plea agreement with Mueller's team and open him up to further legal proceedings that he has financially has been unable to defend himself against. Flynn, who has worked his entire career on a government salary, has spent over $1 million on his legal defense. The financial burden has forced him to sell his home in Alexandria, Virginia, and move into a family home in Rhode Island. He's been effectively bankrupted and has had his reputation torn to shreds, all for the supposed crime of misleading the FBI about a perfectly legal conversation he had as incoming national security advisor with a former Russian ambassador to the U.S. A man who spent his entire life dedicated to his country, who has served in some of the world's most dangerous war zones on behalf of the United States, has been targeted for destruction. Robert Mueller's team of Democrat prosecutors using unethical wiretaps, along with the now contested testimony of wholly corrupted FBI officials, has silenced Michael Flynn. Some of Flynn's associates have suggested that he should set up a GoFundMe fund to help with his tremendous legal expenditures. But Jordan writes, he is an honorable man and will not ask for money. The Intelligence Committee and Mueller's team have used leaks to the media and contacts with members of the TV pundit class to recklessly attribute labels to General Flynn. Without evidence, we have heard for years now that Flynn has colluded with the Russians, with some even claiming he committed a form of treason. Flynn, on the other hand, has been silenced through legal intimidation tactics. He cannot speak for himself, so others must make the case for him. And, you know, I've certainly tried to make the case for him these many months. Remember, it was Peter Strzok, who was the FBI agent, who was one of two that interviewed Michael Flynn. And the finding later by Mueller was that Mueller had lied to the FBI. But the FBI said, no, he didn't lie. Even James Comey said publicly he didn't lie. But my understanding is he pled guilty just to get it over with. He couldn't afford to defend himself. His family had done so much financially. At least one son. I don't know but there's more to the family. So it is just an unbelievable story. And Adam Lovinger, I didn't tell you, Adam lost his job. He's got like three little children, and he's struggling financially, but they've tried to destroy him. So I want to tell you one practical thing. If you would like to help Michael Flynn, you can do that. Many of us are doing that. MikeFlynnDefenseFund.org. MikeFlynnDefenseFund.org. You can help him. Again, he's not setting up a GoFundMe page. He won't do that. He's too much of a gentleman. But if you want to help him, go to MikeFlynnDefenseFund.org. And heaven knows, conservatives and champions, truth tellers, have been punished and punished repeatedly. There's injustice in the courts. There's injustice from the FBI. You know, I just know that our God is a God of justice, and there will be justice. I don't know if it'll be in this lifetime. I pray that it will be for our own mental health, but you know that eternal justice is going to be a lot more ominous than anything they might face here. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.